Why don't you start recording now?
Recording is active.
Okay, thank you. This is Judge Pat Ward. This is in the Montana-Dakota natural gas rate case, case number PU-17-295. The parties have briefed a motion in limine with respect to the admissibility of a settlement agreement from a recent Montana rate case, and we did agree to have oral argument at this time at 3 p.m. today. Before I turn it over to you, Mr. Sanderson, I just want to take attendance one more time. I understand I have Paul Sanderson on the line, Mitch Armstrong, and John Hsu. Are any of the other parties, are the interveners represented? Okay, anybody else on the line at all?
Ilana is on the line.
Okay, Ilana. Okay, Mr. Sanderson, I'll give you about 10 to 15 minutes if you need that much.
Thank you, Judge. First, on behalf of Montana-Dakota, appreciate you setting up a quick hearing and staff, advocacy staff's response and being able to address this issue prior to the hearing. As you're aware, Judge, on May 22nd, MDU learned of advocacy staff intended to offer a Montana settlement agreement in this case. The settlement agreement was entered into in a Montana rate proceeding recently between Montana-Dakota and the corresponding Montana Consumer Council. And as advocacy staff in this case has made clear, they intend to offer this evidence of this Montana settlement agreement to establish the return of equity and the exclusion of an SSIP program, two issues that are relevant in the North Dakota case. We have moved to exclude this evidence under Rule 408 and 403 of the North Dakota Rules of Evidence. We have filed both the brief in support of the motion in limine and a reply brief that I assume all parties have received. Interestingly, Judge, in the Montana settlement agreement itself, MDU and the Montana Consumer Council agreed that no part of the stipulation should be used in any other proceeding before the Commission of Montana, and neither party should advance any argument in any other proceeding that is predicated on portions of this stipulation. Montana-Dakota and the Montana Consumer Council agreed and acknowledged that this agreement is unique to the facts of the Montana case, and they are entering the stipulation as a resolution of those facts, and agreed they weren't bound to use those representations. So both MDU and the Montana Consumer Council agreed that the settlement agreement in Montana would not be used in any other proceedings. And yet now we have North Dakota's advocacy staff attempting to introduce evidence of this Montana settlement to help support its claims in this case. We believe that's improper. First, with respect to Rule 408, typically as we've cited in our brief, the evidence of settlements are not admissible to prove liability, non-liability, or amount of a claim. That's standard law. It's been the law in North Dakota for a long time. And there's a reason for that, Judge. As you're fully aware, Rule 408 is intended to promote settlement agreements. And in doing so, parties are encouraged to compromise disputed claims. And if settlement evidence is offered or allowed to be introduced in other claims, it would have a chilling effect on encouraging parties to resolve claims, which is a goal of all litigation and contested cases. Now, advocacy staff argues that it wasn't a party to the agreement, so it should be able to offer the settlement agreement in the regulatory proceeding in North Dakota. Well, as cited in our reply brief today, Judge, that's contrary to established law. The North Dakota Supreme Court has held that Rule 408 excludes evidence of settlements between litigants and third parties. That's a Thomas v. Stickland case that's cited. And I've also cited numerous federal court and other jurisdictional cases that the application of 408 is not restricted to the parties who are involved in the settlement. The federal courts have recognized that evidence of a settlement in different cases is not admissible to show liability under Federal Rule 408. And other courts have rejected attempts by a party to introduce settlements by another party in a lawsuit to establish the validity of their present claim. And again, that's exactly what what advocacy staff is attempting to do with introduction of the Montana-Dakota settlement agreement. They basically want to take the position that because Montana agreed to a rate of return in another case in Montana, therefore that should be the rate of return in this case and established to prove their claim. And again, that's improper. But more important than that, Judge, I cited to multiple cases that have said even in rate cases, offers of compromise and settlements should not be used. The other courts recognize rate litigation is costly, and a compromise offered by a utility company to buy its piece with consumer counsel does not necessarily mean that such a rate will produce a fair return. Instead, it's negotiations between the parties that is important. And I've cited both a South Carolina case and a Supreme Court of New York case that hold settlement agreements from other matters should not be introduced and admitted in a rate case. The other interesting aspect of this, Judge, is advocacy counsel wants to argue that the terms of the settlement agreement, of the Montana settlement agreement, are relevant in this case, particularly with respect to ROE, yet their own expert, who they're putting up to present evidence on ROE, put in his own direct testimony that ROEs in settled cases are not relevant and should not be used, and in fact, he does not use them in determining a rate of return. So their own expert disputes counsel's allegation that this is relevant. And finally, Judge, introduction of this would result in a needless waste of time at this hearing. As all the parties know, we're already crunched for time in this case with the parties and worried about the amount of time we had. And what advocacy staff wants to do is introduce irrelevant evidence in another jurisdiction. So what that would mean is Montana, Dakota would then have to explain why in Montana that settlement agreement was reached, which would include a description and evidence of all the other factors that came into play. This was not just a single issue settlement. There were a number of factors involved. But then again, Judge, if we're going to let in Montana, then MDU should be permitted to introduce evidence of its settled ROEs in all other jurisdictions, including South Dakota, Minnesota, Wyoming, Idaho, Washington. It would be a waste of time to start introducing into a North Dakota rate case these settlements in other jurisdictions that have nothing to do with North Dakota, have different rate structures and different issues in play. So introduction of this would result in a needless waste of time. And for those reasons, Judge, under Rule 408 and Rule 403, Montana, Dakota respectfully requests that the motion limine to exclude the evidence be granted. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the judge may have.
Okay. I don't have any questions. Mitch, you can reply.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, everyone. Mitch Armstrong on behalf of advocacy staff. Judge, anytime you look at the rules of evidence and a motion in limine, the first question is, how is this evidence intended to be used? And as I've indicated in my brief, how I intend to use that evidence really depends on what MDU testifies to at the hearing, because there are exceptions to Rule 408, and I think the way I intend to use it will fall within those exceptions, even if Rule 408 applies. Now, in considering this evidence, Judge, this isn't your typical settlement agreement or negotiations. We're not dealing with negotiations. This is a publicly filed document in the last month in Montana, Dakota's only other jurisdiction, right next door to North Dakota, agreeing to an ROE and agreeing to how to handle an SSIP project. This will not result in some waste of time. It is relevant evidence. In order to, for Montana, Dakota to address if there are truly any differences between those issues in Montana and North Dakota, it's one question on each issue. Why did you agree to this in Montana when you're seeking this in North Dakota? Why were you willing to waive the SIP in Montana when you aren't willing to waive it in North Dakota? That's the extent of time it would take to deal with this evidence. It would not create an unneeded waste of time. That argument is simply because they are similar. These aren't jurisdiction-specific issues. ROE, if you look at the ROE evidence in this case, all of the witnesses have talked about ROEs in various other jurisdictions around the country. I don't know why Montana, Dakota's currently agreed to ROE in Montana would be excluded within the last month. Same with the SSIP mechanism. They're seeking a tracking mechanism for some replacement projects, and part of their argument is, you know, between 30 and 40 jurisdictions in the country have adopted a similar tracking mechanism. The commission should also be able to consider what's happening in the other jurisdictions, including the other jurisdictions Montana, Dakota conducts business in. So it's kind of giving the commission all the information instead of just some of it that Montana, Dakota wants to offer. It will not create a waste of time, and it is relevant evidence. As far as the cases cited in MDU's reply brief, I'll go specifically to the ones dealing with rate case issues. They're simply not the type of agreement we have in this case. The Rockland case was evidence of negotiations for interim rates. We're not seeking to introduce evidence of negotiations. We're seeking to introduce what Montana Dakota Utility is seeking in Montana in the last month. As far as the DeFuski case, that was a stipulation between basically the South Carolina advocacy staff in a consumer group. It wasn't a stipulation involving the company. So those cases are distinguishable on their face. But ultimately, how this evidence is used is dependent on the testimony at the hearing and should not be excluded until that is presented in that way. That's really the extent of my response argument, Your Honor. I don't think Montana, Dakota can ask the commission to consider some evidence from other jurisdictions, but not other evidence from other jurisdictions, especially when it's evidence that Montana, Dakota Utility voluntarily entered into, and it's right next door to North Dakota. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Hsu, do you have any position on this?
No, Your Honor. Mitch Armstrong made the argument on behalf of the advocacy staff.
Okay. And just one more time, are any of the interveners on the line? Okay. Paul, do you have a brief response to Mitch at all?
Yeah, Judge. I think the argument that all information should come in, there would be no purpose for you to be here presiding over this if you're to allow all information in. The rules of evidence apply. You're to interpret the rules and only allow in admissible evidence. A motion limine is appropriate at this time, as it is in any other case, as is exactly why you put motion in limine deadline in your case, in the scheduling order, to address these issues, because the ALJ has the opportunity and right to exclude and should exclude evidence that is not properly admissible before this commission. Our job is to make a record. If the commission considers evidence that should not be considered, it causes grounds for error and causes a potential for reversal on this. And that's the whole function. So the motion limine is proper. It should be decided, and the rules of evidence should apply to this hearing. Now, Mr. Armstrong has said, you know, we may come up with an exception to Rule 408, but they haven't offered any other reason other than to prove the validity of the claims on ROE and the SSIP mechanism. So, you know, they haven't alleged this to produce bias or show undue delay or anything else. It goes to the heart of the claim they want. They want to argue that the ROE should be less than the 10% requested by Montana Dakota in this case. And to do that, they're attempting to establish that by offering a settlement agreement. And that is improper under Rule 408. And the assertion that I'll only correct one thing counsel said. He made the comment Montana, Dakota's only other jurisdiction is Montana, and that's not factually correct. Montana, Dakota has utilities in other jurisdictions besides Montana, including South Dakota, Wyoming, and Minnesota as well. So, for those reasons, Judge, we believe this is appropriate for a ruling on a motion in limine. And certainly, if we open the door somehow later, then Mr. Armstrong can bring up this issue again. But it is appropriate for a ruling at this point, we would say. So with that, I'd be free to answer any questions you may have.
Let me stop you there. And I don't have any questions. I've read the briefs. I've read several of the cases that were cited, and I've, thought about it a little bit since you first brought it up. I think you both have some elements of being right in your arguments, but I am inclined to agree with Mr. Sanderson's last couple statements. Basically, I don't see that I should admit it for purposes of showing that Montana accepted a different ROE rate or that MDU agreed to delay the SSIP program in Montana. So to that extent, I'm just ruling, orally here. I don't think I'll have time to get a written decision on this typed up today before the thing tomorrow morning, so I want you guys to know where I'm going with this. My thought is that at this point I'm going to grant the motion in limine with respect to the Montana settlement agreement. I'm not going to allow it to be offered to show that for some reason MDU accepted a different rate return of equity in Montana or that it delayed its SIP program that it's asking for here. I agree that under Rule 408 and Rule 403, it's an evidence of compromise, in my opinion. It could be more prejudicially unfair. And so from that standpoint, at this point, my preliminary decision is I'm not going to allow it in. I'm certainly not going to let it in for those kinds of reasons. As far as the argument that was made about the terms of the agreement in Montana, I agree with Mr. Armstrong's position in his brief that agreement is a little bit ambiguous with respect to it can be explained away in another proceeding depending on how it's offered or why it's offered. But again, I think if we start getting into what you did in Montana and why you did it, it gets us off the track of what the commissioners need to decide here, which is the issues that are defined as to what the proper rate is going to be for North Dakota. Now, that being said, if, in fact, there is an opening, like Paul said, I'm not completely nailing the door shut, Mr. Armstrong. If something comes up and you feel that settlement agreement is appropriate for cross-examination for some particular other purpose that it might be necessary to admit it that falls into one of the exceptions to Rule 408, then we need to talk about that at the time that comes up. And I would suggest a procedure for how we do that. That procedure would be that we take a break, and during that break, I would say ask me for us to take a break. We'll take a break. We'll deal with the admissibility of it while the commissioners are out of the room. We'll make a record of that, and then we'll decide how to proceed. But as it stands right now, I don't think that the exhibit should be offered by staff without some basis that opens the door other than just to show that the return on equity was accepted in Montana at a lower rate than what they're asking for here, or that they agreed to delay their SSIP program. So that's my ruling from the bench. Again, it's a preliminary ruling. But as far as those issues go, it's going to take something to change my mind. But again, there may be other issues that come up, so I'm going to allow counsel that opportunity. Is there anything else that we need to talk about today?
Judge, I just have one comment that may lead to additional discussion, but,
okay.
As far as admission or not of the evidence, questioning that may get into the substance of it, You know, it's kind of our view that the commission doesn't sit as a jury where you exclude things. They sit more as a court, and it's ultimately the commission's decision on what evidence it is admissible. So it may be an issue we need to take to the commission as well. I didn't bring that up in my argument because I had it in the brief, but so it may be something that has to come up, you know, not outside of the presence of the commission.
Well, I think when it comes up, we'll want to address it outside their presence first, and then if you want to make an offer of proof, and then we can talk about how to go forward at that point.
Sounds good.
Okay. Anything else? Alana, do you have anything else we need to address today? Okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, and I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Excuse me, Judge?
Yes.
Steve had me turned off. Okay, sorry. Just don't let this man in charge of these things. No. Anyway, there were about two sentences that you stated that cut out completely here and we didn't get, so I don't know if they're also recorded. Are you going to be putting your six sentences down in writing of your ruling or not, or repeating them tomorrow morning? Or
I can do that, but I don't think it can be ready by tomorrow morning. I can try to do that and get that eventually into the record, but my preliminary decision, I hope you got enough of that for the record. It's simply that I'm granting the motion in limine, at least with respects to the issues of the rate of return on equity accepted in Montana and the fact that MDU delayed its SSIP agreement in Montana. I don't see the relevance of that. I think it's more prejudicial than probative. So that's kind of that in a nutshell. But I'm not nailing the door shut if for some other reason it needs to be offered in.
Okay. We did get that. And then there was a little bit of discussion of the rule of evidence in the middle, but I think it related to those two points. So.
Okay. All right.
And, Judge, just,
thank you.
I guess as a precursor, and I'll think about a little bit more, but I may be then objecting to evidence of any tracking mechanisms around the country at the hearing as well.
Okay. And then we'll take those up as we need to. All right. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow morning.
All right.
Thank you, Judge.
Yep. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.